Hey everybody, this is Tim Shorts of Gothridge Manor, and I'm doing a Saturday podcast in my car, running to get pizzas. Good thing, Saturday pizza. I don't know what we're going to watch. Hopefully something good. It seems like more choices you have, the less you figure out what you want to watch. So, but hopefully we'll get something good on. We're kind of already getting into the horror movie mode. In beginning of August starts our Halloween season, because it's just not a day, it's 3 months, we consider it. And we start putting up the Halloween decorations and start watching horror movies, but we're kind of already been doing that. Hulu's got a lot of good selections. Right now we have Hulu, Disney, and Prime. We kind of rotate them out. Amazon, of course, is a yearly subscription, so you can't rotate that one out, but like the other one, we're probably, I don't know when we'll rotate it out. We just got it just recently. But yeah, so we're looking for some good horror films. We're more into the supernatural and spooky stuff than the splatterpunk or just slasher kind of films. I mean, the good old fashioned, 80 slasher films, Halloween and Friday the 13th I'm not as big a fan as Nightmare on Elm Street. I don't know why. Maybe it's too hokey for me. A little cheesy. Or the other ones, are just big monster-like people who just are unkillable for the most part. Anyways, so a little side note. I'm going through my Judges Guild books. I have a good collection of them from when I bought them back in the 80s and whatnot. I mean, I have a lot of holes in my collection. I am not a completionist and by any means, but I think it was a Dungeoneering one, and I was looking up one of the monsters, and I absolutely loved it. The alignment for the monster was hungry, and I just thought that was perfect. it was a Glick, G-L-E-K, and it was an invisible creature with three tentacles, and it could attack while it was invisible. Did 1d6 points of damage. So I think it was immune to fire, but I just kind of liked the little creature because his alignment was hungry. And I don't know, I thought it was kind of cool having this invisible creature that was attacking the party. That would, I don't know. I think a Glick is going to make it into one of my adventures. And that's what brings me around to the main topic about how do you populate your adventures? And with that, you have to set a premise, because there's so many different ways of doing things. You guys can hear the rain out there, can't you? So many different settings, environments, but it all comes down to finding the right mix of creatures to make it interesting. And sometimes you get so many monster manuals, because I am a collector of monster manuals. I absolutely love getting the newest versions of creature catalogs, or Wolfgang, what was it, that Cobalt Press has creature codexes, and I forgot what the, Tome of Beasts, yeah. And then, of course, on Swords of Wizardry, you have Monstrosities and the Tome of Beast, or Tome of Monster, Monstrosities and Tome of Horrors, and that one. Both of those are invaluable resources. The Tome of Beasts through Cobalt Press, for me, is more novelty monsters. They're not usually monsters I'm going to go to regularly fill out my creatures or my dungeons, but they're the ones that, they're kind of like the spice creatures that I'll add in there. Monster spice type deal, where these are something that the players have either never encountered or rarely have ever encountered. And it makes it a little bit more interesting because they don't have it memorized or have some sort of semblance of the power level that these creatures could be on, or kind of just know what kind of powers they have just from playing the game for quite a long time. Then there's, of course, the oldies but goodies. You know, you're talking about the first edition Monster Manual. And then, of course, you've got the Fiend Folio, which is still probably my favorite. You know, it's either 1A or 1B. You know, it's always up there. I always loved that one. And then the second Monster Manual from back in the day. Those are ones I go to regularly. But the other thing I do, though, like say I populate a dungeon or an adventure with a particular monster. Let's just say hags, because that's one of my favorite ones to do. So this hag creature has, you know, stats like everybody else in the Monster Manual. However, there is little pieces of culture woven into some of the descriptions, and usually it's only a sentence or two. You know, and I still remember from the first Monster Manual, like hags are keeping people in these weird cocoons, and they eventually turn into lemurs, and then they use them as currency in hell, which I just thought was just freaking fantastic little major tidbit. And I've worked that into adventures before, and I do enjoy that, adding that kind of thing to it. But if you go into the different ones, like Pathfinder's version of the hag, or like getting the complete book. I don't know if there's a complete book of the hag or not. Oh, 1 second, guys. Got to go pick up my pizza. All right, guys, I'm back. Make sure I don't hit anybody. Busy parking lot on a rainy day. Pizza's embottened. Yes. I guess my alignment right now is hungry also. So back to the hags. Sometimes they come out with some really nice details, especially when you get one of those like complete guides to, or Slayer's guide to, you know, there's various ones that they have out there. I don't think they've had any new ones lately. I know Goodman Games had a series, and then also, was it Mongoose? Somebody else had those ones, and I try to get as many of those as I possibly can. I have most of them right now. Of course, now that they're sort of collector's items, so trying to find them for a reasonable price is near impossible, so I don't want to spend like $50 on a 24 page paperback thing. You know, I think I have mostly everything in PDF. If I don't, I think I got everything here anyhow. So anyways, it's good to use those as resources to really bring a monster, creature, whatever, more life. I mean, hags are a little bit easier because they're a bit more powerful. They tend to be, if they're not the boss monster thing, they're more, you know, high level or mid level. I don't know what you call it, isolated monster, because generally they're not going to be minions of people unless you're really running a high level campaign and there's some like diabolical force that leads them. And the interesting thing too is like then they come from the first plane of hell of Avernus. And I don't know, to me that always made it interesting because I know the one adventure that I created, that's where the players were at. So while they were in Avernus, like clerics and paladins wouldn't be able to, they could come in with what they had. So if they had a few spells or whatever remaining, they could use those. But they, they weren't able to renew their abilities while they remained in hell, unless they were, you know, had their powers came from one of the minions of hell, or, you know, dupes of hell, or whatever you want to call it. But generally, yeah. So that was kind of one of the side quirks that, you know, I would throw in there. So sometimes the adventures became a little bit more challenging if they were in that plane. The thing is I never tried to explain it, or never tried to, like, justify the physical location of this pocket of Vernus in the, maybe the prime material. What the fuck is this guy doing? Just, like, went all the way into my lane for some dumbass reason. Jesus Christ. Anyways. Because it's just, it's too, I don't know, I think if you try to physically justify the juxtapositions between, like, different planes, planier things, it's just, that I don't have time for that, and I don't want to do that. That's boring. It's just there because it's there. Now, I'm not going to build one of those. I remember, what is it, the Player's Handbook, or the Deities and Demigods, or whatever, they had that picture of the different elemental planes and how they physically existed with one another. And I don't know, I just don't see them just existing and, okay, you're in this corner, you're in that corner, you're in the center. I don't buy it like that. I guess I think of it more as interlapping dimensions on top of, instead of calling them planes, maybe it's like the fire dimension, or, you know, I don't know. Like I said, I try not to justify it, or try not to explain too much, because then that's too metaphysical for me, and my brain doesn't work that great at that level. But I've never had a problem with it. The players always thought it was cool, and just having that little bit of flavor in there to set your adventure up. And that all came from just looking up the different things of that and what kind of elements that they bring into an adventure. And I just love doing that stuff. And you can do it with the smaller monsters too, like your everyday orcs, your everyday gnolls. Jeff and I were talking the other day on one of his podcasts, RPG Ramblings, about bringing to life different monsters. Now, there's two books right now. I guess there's going to be a third one coming out. And I cannot remember the name of the guy. It's the Monsters Know What They're Doing book. And then, I don't know, he's got a second one out. He's going to have a third one out, I think, in the fall. And they're pretty decent books. I don't know how much they knew stuff that they bring. But he organizes his thoughts. It's like I kind of do what he talks about, but he's way more organized about talking about it than I ever have been. So it was kind of fun to read his different versions of stuff and how to make, like, these ordinary monsters a little bit more potent. And for how I do that is I build some sort of mini culture. I call them micro cultures for holistic. That's how I kind of think of things. Even when I'm thinking about different, you know, humans, and like, if you're in one guild, that's kind of, if you're a member of the Thieves Guild, that's a microculture. If you're a Thieves Guild member and you belong to this gang, well, that's another little microculture. So they all have their rules and expectations of a person, and that really adds, I think, a lot of flavor into a game. And I don't think you really have to do a ton of work to do that, just like maybe two, three things. I think if you do more than that at first, you know, I don't know how much you're going to get into it. And we all have our own little versions of how much work we want to do. Like when I did my Thieves Guild, I didn't delve too deep into how it was going to work, because I kind of wanted it to be a little ephemeral. let it be a little bit more mysterious than I did maybe like the Adventurers Guild or a Fighters Guild or something like that. You know, I just kind of used more of a military model for, you know, like the Fighters Guild. And because if I start defining the something like the Thieves Guild, it kind of loses its, I don't know, its mystery or, you know, potential danger or whatever. It just becomes a bunch of guys that if so-and-so has this many guys, well, the Adventurers could pretty much wipe out all those guys and then this people. It's almost like a mega dungeon. Sometimes it's better not to define it and just let it just roll with it and see how it works. You know, be consistent and fair to your players at the same time, but also don't let these arbitrary board lines kind of confine what they can do in some ways. I'm probably not explaining myself very well, but if you use those in adventures, say, you know, you're using some orcs or whatever, and maybe these orcs are not, and I'm not saying that they're not evil, but maybe they're not violent orcs. They're just sort of like, hey, we're doing our thing. Leave us alone. We got nothing to do with you, but we'll defend ourselves if we have to. They don't have to be, you know, mindless oorogs just like slam their bodies up against the wall until the bodies are piled up high enough that they can just scale the wall by crawling over bodies, you know. They don't have to be that way. There's so many different ways you could do them. I mean, you can still keep them as an enemy. You can still keep them as even a potent enemy in some ways, but they don't have to be a mindless horde of just people orcs to kill. So, but keep that in mind. I don't know. I just was thinking about that today, and I guess Jeff's things. I got to get that Kobold's Guide to Monsters to see what they have to say in that too. So, but all right, guys, I'm home. It's pizza time. So take care. Roll better than me, and we'll talk soon.